Our study continues in the 9th chapter of Joshua. We're ready to begin with this 16th verse. We just learned in the previous lesson, in the earlier part of this chapter, how the people from Gibeon had deceived Joshua and his princes into thinking that they had come from a far-off city. And consequently, they deceived them into going ahead and making an agreement with them, swearing with an oath that they would not do them any damage, and allowing them then to be servants of the Israelites. But we find in the 16th verse where Joshua learns that this was not the truth, that they had deceived them, and that they really were a city in Canaan and should have been destroyed according to the commandment of God. But because of this oath that they'd made, this agreement that they made, Israel lived up to their part of the bargain, and they did not destroy the Gibeonites. And we're going to see that further verified in the remaining portion of this 9th chapter. So beginning with the 16th verse, "And it came to pass at the end of 3 days, after they had made a league with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors, and that they dwelt among them." So the falsehood that the people of Gibeon had perpetrated was found out about 3 days later. This is true of most lies. Usually a lie does come out eventually that it is a lie, and then the parties that were lied to make this discovery, and the consequences follow. But at this time, 3 days after they had made this league, they discovered they had been lied to. It was really too late to change things, because Israel felt, especially Joshua felt, that they had an obligation to live up to that league or that agreement that they'd made with the people of Gibeon. So they heard that they were their neighbors, and they dwelt among them. Verse 17, "And the children of Israel journeyed and came unto their cities on the third day." Now their cities were Gibeon and Shephirah and Beethroth and Kirjath-Jearim. So we see there were actually 4 cities involved. However, it seems that Gibeon was the main city. Now, these cities were located in the vicinity of an area of about 10 miles north of Jerusalem, or kind of northwest of Jerusalem. And we see in this 17th verse where the children of Israel journeyed and came unto their cities on the third day. Now, these cities are about 25 or 30 miles away from Gilgal, and so the children of Israel just went over there. I don't mean that every person went, but they sent a sizable party, enough to go over there and investigate this matter and really stop and see what has happened to them with the league that they made with these people that should have been destroyed, but who really now were not going to be destroyed because they had agreed not to do it. Verse 18, "And the children of Israel smote them not, because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by the Lord God of Israel." So they were going to live up to their part of the agreement. Israel was. They should have investigated this matter more before they jumped into the agreement with them. They did not even go to God and ask for His guidance and His counsel in the matter. The least they could have done was to have gone to Eliezer and had him to consult with the Urim and Thummim to see if this was a reasonable agreement to make, to see if these people were telling the truth or not. But nevertheless, Israel had already been duped into it. They made the agreement, and they decided to live up to their part of the agreement. So the princes of the congregation sworn unto them by the God of Israel. Consequently, Israel smote them not. Continuing in verse 18, "And all the congregation murmured against the princes." Now, this is one time when the congregation felt like that the princes made a poor agreement, and they murmured against them. They didn't go along with what they wanted to do. Nevertheless, the authority of the princes apparently overrules the murmuring of the congregation. And so in verse 19, "But all the princes said unto all the congregation, We have sworn unto them by the Lord God of Israel. Now therefore we may not touch them." And we would like to stress here the importance that these princes of Israel place upon the fact that they had made an oath And because of this oath, they felt duty-bound to live up to the bargain. Even though it had been obtained on false pretenses, nevertheless, they had been given every opportunity to not make this agreement. They didn't have to make the agreement, and they made it, and so they decided to go ahead and follow through with it. So he says, "Now therefore we may not touch them." Verse 20, "This we will do to them. We will even let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swear unto them." And we've made a poor agreement, but still we're going to have to live up to it, because we could have a lot worse thing happen to us if we fail to keep our part of the agreement. Verse 21, "And the princes said unto them, Let them live. Let them be hewers of wood and drawers of water unto all the congregation, as the princes had promised them." So these people from Gibeon and these three other near cities to Gibeon are going to be allowed to live, but they will be slaves, or at least servants, to the rest of the congregation. And they're going to be given the jobs of hewers of wood and drawers of water unto all the congregation. Now these are really very menial tasks, but in the long run we can see how this would be quite a blessing to Israel. First of all, to have these four cities to be converted and followers of the true God, to give up their idolatry, and this then would result in the saving of their souls and more people serving the true and living God. Second of all, though, it's a position that relieves the Israelites of some very difficult tasks here. To be the hewers of wood, and we're going to see where it applies to the house of God. This is a daily job. They had a continual fire at the altar. And then they had not only the daily sacrifices, but the boiling of the flesh. And so there was a need for wood constantly. And the same is true of the water. So they would have to be hewers of wood and drawers of water, and there'd be a need for them. At this time, they didn't have, like we have today, running water. You'd have to go out to the well and draw the water up in a bucket and then haul it a certain distance to the place where it was going to be used. And so they could serve a very useful purpose in this capacity. So the Gibeonites did then become an actual member of the congregation in this capacity of being servants. We read in Nehemiah 3:7, where the Gibeonites are involved in going back to Jerusalem when it was re-inhabited after the captivity. And in Nehemiah 3:7, he talks about them helping to repair the breach of the wall. Again, in Nehemiah 7:25, he enumerates there that the men who went back to Jerusalem from Gibeon were 95. In number. So we see that the Gibeonites then did become a permanent part of the nation of Israel. So in verse 22, "And Joshua called for them, and he spake unto them, saying, Wherefore have you beguiled us, saying, We are very far from you, when you dwell among us?" So Joshua wants to have one last question, one last encounter about this thing. He had been deceived, and he had acted upon that deception, and so he just simply asked them face to face now, "Why did you do this? Why did you tell us that you live very far from us when you dwell among us here? Why did you deceive us like this? Now, therefore, you are cursed, and there shall be none of you freed from being bondmen, and hewers of wood and drawers of water for the house of my God." So he specifies really what their duties are going to be here. It's going to be for the house of my God, which would be at this time the tabernacle and later the temple. Verse 24, "And they answered Joshua and said," now they're going to give the reason why they went through this deception, and they've got a very good reason for it. "They said, Because it was certainly told thy servants, how that the Lord thy God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land, and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Therefore we were sore afraid of our lives because of you, and have done this thing. They're just simply telling Joshua, we knew that you were directed by God to come in here and take this land. We knew that you were not to spare any of the inhabitants of it, that we were all to be put to death. And so we were afraid for our lives, and this was the only way we could think of to spare our lives. Now, as we mentioned in the last lesson, there was a provision made in Deuteronomy by Moses for the cities that were far off. They could make an agreement with the cities that were far off. They could agree to have peace with them, and they could spare them. But the close cities, the ones in Canaan itself, they were not to have any kind of agreement like that with them. And so these men from Gibeon knew this, and that's why they came and pretended to be from a far-off city, from a far-off country, and they got their league made, they got their peace made. It was ratified by an oath, they swore to it, and so what they had really done then, they had spared their lives. Now, true, they were servants, but they considered it better to be a servant than to be slaughtered with the sword or some other means of warfare. And so that's the reason they'd done this. And really, this is quite a statement of faith on their part. They believed that this living God could bring these things about. They believed that the Israelites were a conquering nation, and they were going to commit the rest of their lives and the rest of their existence to this fact. And so we see a committing of their destiny to what they believed in. And I'm sure all these things are factors in how this worked out, but it worked out to the point that they then did have their lives spared. Although they were servants, they considered that to be better than to have lost their lives. So verse 25, and now, behold, we are in thine hand. As it seemeth good and right unto thee to do unto us, do. Now that is truly an attitude of humility. They were going to be servants, and they were willingly doing this. They were volunteering to do it. And so they tell Joshua, whatever it seems good to you and right to you to do to us, do it. Verse 26, and so he did unto them, and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel, that they slew them not. So Israel had marched over there. They were probably ready to go ahead and capture these cities and destroy the people, but because of the agreement, this is the way it worked out. It did not do them any damage, and Joshua did what he thought was right and good to them. So verse 27 concludes the matter. And Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord, even unto this day, in the place which he should choose. So because they were then the servants of the altar of the Lord and the house of God, they relieved the other members of the children of Israel, primarily the Levites, of these duties and gave them more freedom to do other things. And so he says they remain in that position even unto this day. And so we have to think of them as being members of the group that were called the Nethinim. Now there were provision made for Israel in earlier times to take in captives and to let them do these duties about the tabernacle. And the people who did this were called the Nethinim. And so we'd have to think that the Gibeonites then became the predominant members of this group, the Nethinim, which carried about the menial tasks of the temple and earlier of the tabernacle, and relieved the Levites and the priests of those duties so they could do more productive things for the service of God. So this concludes the ninth chapter of Joshua.